Welcome to Blog Talk Radio,
everybody. Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Let me see if I could hear. Can you hear me now, Aiden?
It was working. I hung up once it started working.
Okay, cool. So welcome to Blog Talk Radio, everybody. I'm having technical difficulties because it seems that there's something every other week. So today we have a special guest. Her name's Jennifer Van Etta. She does she runs the COVID Terminal Island group on Facebook. You can find her on there. And I need to make sure that I might get any sound from my computer. Nothing. So I'm going blind right here. Let's see.
Hello.
Hey, Jennifer. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm having initial issues with my computer right now.
Oh, okay.
So it's always something, and like every other week, one week I'll get it right, and then next week it's all done. So you run the terminal COVID-19 Terminal Island on Facebook, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and you also have some other stuff going on, so if you would like to introduce yourself to everybody.
Hello, I am Jennifer Van Etta. I reside down in Southern California, San Diego. Last year in 2021, my loved one is actually still in Terminal Island, and that's in San Pedro. It's a federal facility. They had COVID hit the building, and they were overcrowded like every prison across America. I got a very scary letter from a loved one that I know is a very strong individual, and I've never had him ask for help in such a way. I jumped into gear because I found out that Terminal Island staff was putting inmates in a abandoned warehouse. They were trying to separate the people that were positive from the people that were not positive. So they took inmates and put them in a Unicor abandoned warehouse, which was used for a lead paint work area when it was in operation. These men were put in there. There was no running water. There was no heat. There was bats. There was pigeons. There was rodents. That had made this place their home. And they thought that this was humane to put our loved ones in. I went into high gear. I reached out to Congress. I reached out to the media. I reached out to the families, and we created COVID-19 Terminal Island. I was the first one to jump in gear. At that point, Terminal Island, out of all of the federal facilities across America, Terminal Island was the number one. Terminal Island and Lompoc were the number one facilities with COVID. At the time, Terminal Island was number one with COVID. They had 1,055 inmates, and out of 1,055 inmates, 955 had COVID, and we were at 10 deaths at that time. Terminal Island, to this day, that I know of as far as the federal facilities, still have the highest number of fatalities from the COVID. I went into action. I contacted the ACLU. Their Eighth Amendment was being violated. They were treated incorrectly and inhumane. Thank God for the ACLU, we won the case against the Director of Bureau of Prisons and the warden at Terminal Island. ACLU had a professional doctor go in and do an inspection, And there was a 78-page report from this professional doctor that the prisons were not ready for COVID. And there was multiple violations on Terminal Island's part. So at that point, I went into fighting for all inmates, all incarcerated people. I've always had a passion, and I've never liked how the government treated certain people in our society. I feel that our people with mental health, our children, our seniors, people with disabilities, people incarcerated, I have a strong belief that our government is just trying to do away with them. I have found my voice, and I'm not going to shut up. I've got great people on my team. I advocate for everybody. I don't pick and choose. I don't care if you're on drugs. I don't care if you're on alcohol. I don't care if you're a recovering addict. I don't care if you're homeless. You are a human to me, and I will fight for anybody in California that reaches out for me. My biggest problem when I started was that I didn't have resources. There was no, there was resources. Let me correct myself. There was resources, but nobody would tell you the resources. Well, I am a big stickler on that. I reach out. If I don't know an answer, I get it. So now my loved one is incarcerated in Terminal Island, which we have a belief that he's guilty, yes, but he's not guilty of the charge that he was given. Back in 2009, he was fighting a woman for custody for his younger child. The woman that he was fighting had a sister that was a CPS worker in California. That's a Child Protective Services. She had a lot of contacts. So in 2009, to get his daughter from him, because he is his or his world, they plotted a scheme to incarcerate him either for life or the minimum 30 years. There was a detective, there was a district attorney, there was the mayor of San Diego, there was Bonnie Dumanis, a congresswoman, there was also Juan Vargas. All of them were, I've been fighting for 10 years and getting information and gathering information on the truth about how the police set him up. Every attorney I obtain, they get to where they needed a discovery. When they start fishing around for the discovery, they freeze up and stop. Hire an investigator. All we need is a discovery so that we can file a 2255. Which is a 2255 is to say that there's new evidence and there's evidence that could have kept you, got you a different sentence. So investigators, everybody shies away when we ask for the discovery. And everybody knows in every case there's a discovery. There has to be a discovery. Sparky, if you could just help me explain what the discovery is. The discovery is what basically everything they did in the investigation to build their case?
Yeah, it's evidence, it's testimonies, it's every aspect that justified their conviction.
Okay, so every time we ask for that, we get everybody stops and quits the case, gives our money back. Well, last year when the COVID hit, the 2020, they were offering a compassionate release with the First CARES Act for people that qualified for compassionate release. My loved one had been incarcerated at that time 9 years. He had zero write-ups. He had one write-up for being late to a doctor's appointment. He's got 3 college degrees from being incarcerated. He saved 2 man's life while incarcerated before COVID. He has straight A's in all of his education. He has been an ideal role model inmate since he's been incarcerated. He had the highest number of graduates in Sheridan in 2007. So we figured he would have a chance at this compassionate release because he has diabetes, he has high blood pressure, he has asthma, and he has kidney failure. So we as CARE Act, that we would be able to get justice and get him out because he had COVID also in March. So I fished around, and there was an amazing group on Facebook, FamAction.com, Families in Action. They're amazing. They work with people with the federal law. They're helping laws change. They're doing an amazing job, and they went full force in action with all the loved ones who of the people incarcerated. They were able to obtain me a pro bono attorney, which was amazing. Federal defense attorneys down in San Diego wrote an amazing motion for release. The Judge Benitez, the federal Judge Benitez in the Ninth Circuit in San Diego, received that motion on his desk, August of 2020. In September of 2020, the only one witness slash victim slash agent contacted me again and says, I understand that Maurice is trying to get compassionate release because of the COVID and the way they're treating him in prison. And I said, yes. And she says, well, I don't think that that's right. And I still continue to talk to the judge, and I talk to the district attorney. If you would like for me to advocate for you, for him to get out because of the conditions, I can give the judge a call. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If you're the witness on the case, how come 10 years later you're able to just call the judge?
Yeah.
You're just able to call the district attorney. Well, that sounds strange. And what's worse, these people made a documentary on YouTube. The Discovery Channel aired it. It's called Surviving Evil. Season 3, Episode 2, Total Control. The whole thing is made up. It doesn't match her story that she said in court. It doesn't match her story that when she called me in 2017, and now she's calling me in 2020. Still, she wants him to admit his guilt. No. She said that she worked with the police and that they made her testify. And they convinced her that if she didn't testify, that he would do it to others. So this girl testified. However, in 2017, she needed money, and she contacted him at the prison in Texas that he was at. Personally contacted him herself because she wanted to talk to him. So in 2020, we filed for compassionate release because we've got these pro bono attorneys. But wait a minute. My loved one is a sex offender. He's noted as a sex offender. So I jump into gear again and say we have to be proactive instead of reactive because, yes, you can get out on compassionate release because you qualify. But even though you qualify for compassionate release, you still have that case over your head. And society is so judgmental, and they don't know that you were set up. We're still fighting to prove that you were wrongfully convicted. So I hunt down an attorney. I hire a firm, Premier Criminal Defense Attorneys in San Diego. Hallelujah. They take sex crimes, no problem. I asked them in the meeting, this is a high-profile case. It was totally in the news in 2010. Bonnie Dumanis is behind it. Juan Vargas is behind it. Alexa, what's her name? Alexis, I forget her name, but she is the district attorney. They're involved. This is a high-profile case. Can you guys do it? They said, yes, it's going to be $8,500. I said, okay, how much do I need to put down to retain you guys? They said, you need to put down at least $1,450. I said, okay. So I put down the $1,450, and I was able to make $1,000 payments a month. They got their money. They got their money in a timely manner with zero resistance. Here it is, October 21, and they've never filed the motion. We had the motion that we thought ready in January of 2021. We thought that the attorney was going to file this motion 2255 electronically because that's what we paid her to do. In July, we find out that attorney is no longer there. Well, wait a minute. How come nobody told us? Okay, so we get that people change law firms. We get that people move on. So who's handling the case now? Oh, we've got a new woman handling the case. She's lovely, da-da-da-da. Okay, I need to meet with her. So I meet with this new attorney. The new attorney has no record that they even filed this 2255. All this time, we were assuming that this law firm, Premier Criminal Defense, had filed the 2255. The 2255 has to be filed within a timely manner.
Yes.
Okay? It has to be filed within a timely manner. These people sat on this motion, and guess what? My meeting in July, I was told the motion was never filed.
Huh.
The 2255 motion was never filed.
Not
so
at all, huh?
This book never filed, not even completed.
Wow.
So then let's go back to the pro bono attorney. The pro bono filed a motion, a writ, a mandamus for the judge, Benitez, to rule on our compassionate release that we put in August. We put that writ in January. 2 days later, we get a denial. The denial was because he was a danger to society. Yet, when inmates are incarcerated, they get a point system. This point system determines their behavior in society.
And what age did he go in?
Huh?
And what age did he go in?
He went in at age, 41
okay.
or 2. He went in at 41 or 42.
I say that because the point system, when I went into the system, I know exactly what you're talking about. Because I had a record. I was never married. I was never in the military. I was over 100 points and had to do level 4 time for 14 years.
Right.
So I know
exactly
what you're talking about.
The points determine your level. The points determine your behavior. The points kind of low-key determines who you are. It's their way of doing that. But his point, when he turned, the judge said he wanted to know from the Bureau of Prisons if he was a danger to society, and that was the delay in the response on the compassionate release. The Bureau of Prisons responded that he was at zero risk and that as of his birthday in March, he was at no risk to society. And that's what the Judge Benita said he wanted to know. But in January of 2021, he denied the compassionate release. So our new attorney at Premier Criminal Defense tells me this hoo-ha shit, excuse my language.
You're good.
I'm waiting to find out what's going on with the compassionate release because I don't want to file this 2255 if the compassionate release is going to affect it. Well, guess what? We both agreed that it doesn't. The compassionate release was separate from the 2255. So file it. This was in July. Okay, I'm going to file it. What's your problem with our firm? Da, da, da. My problem with your firm is you have a lack of communication. I hired you, and you don't talk to the person, your client. Your client wants to be 100% involved in this, and you're not contacting him. So give me that confidence in your company that you will call him, because I don't know what's going on. I've lost an attorney. I never knew. There was a paralegal that's gone. I never knew. You guys never told us that our attorney was gone. And this whole time, we've assumed that this 2255 was filed. So she says, okay, I see your frustration, this, and that. I said, okay. So here it is, Wednesday, October, what was the date on Wednesday? October 27th, I get a call from my loved one. Wednesday, October 27th. Jennifer, they still haven't filed the 2255. They're pushing me to file a 2241. They're pushing it because the 2255 has a statute of limitation. And guess what? We're out of time. We are out of time to file the 2255 because the first attorney never filed. So now they're trying to push him to do a 2241 because they don't want to take responsibility for being breach of contract. The breach of contract comes is that they were hired over a year ago to file something that they had all the evidence and they never filed. So now they want to push the 2241 to say that, sorry, you know, it was our fault, but it wasn't our fault. We didn't have all the information. So they're trying to make it look like it was because of us that the time ran out. The sad part about this place, Sparky, I referred somebody to this company. And they took his money too. He has, there's the 1170 that could be filed. I don't know what that's for. I don't do state, so I'm not really educated, but I know there was 1170 that would have helped him get out. The attorney told him, you give us $5,000, and I can guarantee to get that charge dropped. Pretty much in the letter is what he said. So
we went
the guy
same
that
thing.
I referred, huh?
We went through the same thing.
Yeah. So the guy that I referred sent them the $5,000. But he gets a letter from the district attorney's office in L.A., and he gets a letter from an advocate company and that does great advocacy out here in California. And both letters say, do not file. You do not have to file. There are so many cases, and we know that this is going on. Don't file. We got a team. We'll contact you. If you want to see an update, just look on our website. But there is no need to file because they're swamped. But the attorney at Premier Criminal Defense tells him, you give us another $5,000 and we'll go ahead and we'll file. Well, guess what? That attorney's gone now too. And that attorney never filed. So now the person that I referred is very angry with me, for one, because I referred them and he lost $5,000 that they did not have. And they're not trying to give him back his money. However, we're going to start a class action suit. So if anybody out there is listening and you've ever used Premier Criminal Defense attorneys and you were wrongfully treated, please, please, reach out to me. I am on Facebook. I'm going to try to find an attorney. I can call the ACLU if it's big enough because I still have them working on the case in Lompoc and Terminal Island. But I'm going to have to do it not because of what they've done, but because of the principle. You sat on my money, you took it, and now the statute of limitation is out. And this man's life, you know, he's got 30 years on a crime that was not, I mean, it shouldn't even have went federal. Let's put it that way. And they got his daughter, of course, the woman, Carolyn. Carolyn is the auntie that had all the hookups with the police. And so she's got his daughter now that he was fighting for. He does not know where she is. He hasn't. I have to be sneaky and do my old investigation and check out Facebook and stuff to see if this girl's alive and if she's okay for him. And so now we're just in limbo. Like, we don't know what to do. Like, we don't know where to turn. We know the system. The problem with the system, it's not about your loved one. It's about the whole system as a whole.
Yeah.
And I've learned that. I've learned that in advocating that I'm not just fighting for my loved one. There's other people with the same charges that are not guilty too. There's other people that are being held on charges that is just wrong. So as a whole, I'm not just fighting for my loved one. I'm fighting to change laws. I'm fighting for people's humanity rights. I'm fighting because I want society to stop judging people. We are nobody to judge. We are freaking human beings. We all breathe. We all bleed red. None of us is better than the other. We're all going to die one day. So we have to fight for each other. So my mission is to get laws passed. We're working on the 924C retro. We're trying to get that retro. We're doing a good job. We're working on the SB 81 and 82 and 83. Those are back in the court. We're working on so much stuff right now, and it's not just for our loved ones. It's for all the individuals in a whole. Then is what we're planning to do. We're going to, I'm going to start, I keep saying this, start a nonprofit. We fight for one, we fight for all. I'm going to start, I'm not going to just say, oh, I'm helping people that were incarcerated, or, oh, I'm helping people that have been on released on parole. No, I'm helping everybody. My goal is to help families. My goal is to help reunite the fathers with the children and the mothers with the children. We're going to make programs. We're going to make a program for people instead of incarcerating somebody for a violation. If you look at the population in our prisons today, most of those people are on violations from drugs, alcohol, domestic violence, mental health. So instead of incarcerating these people because of the violation, obviously there's a problem. These people are reoffending the same thing, which means that is a problem. You don't lock them away and take them from their families and charge taxpayers to house these people. Why aren't we giving them the opportunity to continue working, go to classes for their drugs or whatever their problem is and learn the root of their problem and help them work on it in a comfortable environment? They would have to pay for their stay, but they would still be able to work. They would have to pay for their bed. They would not be incarcerated. They would still be there for their children and their families. And it would be a win-win situation for the taxpayers. So all the money that we're paying for taxes to keep these people incarcerated because they smoked some pot and violated, or they got caught drinking and they violated. So instead of locking those people up, find the root to the problem and fix it. CDCR says it's Department of Corrections Rehabilitation Centers, and that's far from what it is. Far. We were blessed to get that voting out of there. You guys can vote. People can vote. That was a fight, but we did it because we came together. We are non-stoppable in numbers. We have to not fear the retaliation. We have our eyes open now. 2020 opened our eyes. And there's a lot of fraudulent stuff going on with our government. And if we just sit back and keep letting them do that to us, it's never going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And the only way for it to get better is for people to stick your tail between your legs and go for the gusto. You got to do it. Bite the bullet. Be strong. The system is what they want to do. When you attack them, they're going to try everything to break you down. They will mess with your loved one that's incarcerated. Yes, they will retaliate. Yes, they will do stupid things and have you on a run goose chase. But that's their tactic. Their tactic is to break you. And because people don't have the money, people don't have the resources, people don't have the patience, people don't have the mental. And I say mental because this is a huge mental strain. When you're fighting the government or you're fighting the system, oh my gosh, you're going to break 50 million times and talk about, I can't do it. I can't do it. But you got to fight. You got to get up.
Yeah.
You got to do it. You got to do it. And don't ever believe, well, nobody's hearing me. Nobody's hearing me, because you get that way. Gosh, am I talking to brick walls? Doesn't anybody understand me? There is people out there that understand you. There are people out there that are going through what you're going through. You're not a bad person if you have a loved one incarcerated. You are not a bad person, and the families do not deserve to get punished because their loved ones are incarcerated. You did not do the crime. Your loved one did. So why is it so hard for us to find out answers? Why is it so hard for us to visit our loved ones? Why is it so hard for us to get to our loved ones? You guys know the society, the government knows what they're doing. When these people get busted in San Diego, and their families in San Diego, why in the hell do they take them all the way to Tehachapi?
Yeah.
If they're from San Diego, you take them to Tehachapi because their families can't get to them. You isolate them from the outside world so that you can manipulate them and keep them in these cages like animals.
Yeah, but if you listen to the state, what they say is that they do hardships. But if you're inside, they straight tell you that the hardship does no longer exist. Back in the 90s and early 2000s, you were able to submit a letter to the warden or to Sacramento saying, hey, my family has to drive more than 100, 200 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Now what
and
they
you
do,
can
they
get
make
a prison
it so
closer.
Difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they don't do it anymore. And so on paper, they tell you that, yeah, we do this. But your counselor tells you you're out of luck.
Let me tell you about the system. The system in the prisons, they have everything in black and white just like any other corporation. There is policies and procedures that they go through or that they have that our government assumes that they follow. Okay? Stay with me. Every organization has procedures and policies. Every organization has that one person that says, I see the policies, but I'm going to tweak it to my liking. And that's how we're going to roll.
Yeah.
So even though it's in black and white, even though it's in black and white, they do it their way. In visiting on the website, you have a list of things you can wear and not wear. When you go in to visit, you see people in these outfits getting through. Next week, you see people in these outfits and they're getting stopped.
Yeah, it just depends on what the CO feels like.
It depends on the CEO and how they feel that day. Yep. And guess what? If you piss off that CEO that day and don't go change, they will cancel your whole visit. After you just drove from San Diego all the way to Tehachapi because you had a wire bra on and they don't have something close for you. Not everybody has money to just go buy bras. And they're thinking about visiting their loved one and they're excited and they get on the road at 6 in the morning, 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning to go sit in line for an hour to get a visit just to get told you have a wire bra and you can't see your loved one.
Well, just so you know, they will tell you to go to the friends outside box and there's a bin full of used clothes that you can go pick up.
That is for state.
Okay.
That's not for federal. And guess what? Federal, you can go anywhere. So my loved one, his first couple of years was in Oregon. He's been to Oregon, he's been to Texas, and now he's in Terminal Island. How the hell is he going to see his family? His father, and then not only what makes me sick is that there's people incarcerated that are innocent, and they're losing loved ones. Time is going, and they're losing loved ones, yet they're innocent doing crimes for crimes that they never even committed. And they're losing their mothers and fathers, and they're having grandbabies, and they're having kids that they can't see. Our system is corrupt, and we need to press. In November 2020, we're trying to get the three-strike law out of there. We need to raise $14,000 to get the three-strike law on the ballot, okay? If you guys, if anybody wants to call in, it's called Help Us Repeal the California Three-Strike Law. Our goal is, we need $14,000. If you have any questions, please feel free to send us a letter for your loved ones. Reach out to us via email, contact at repeal3strikes.org. Basically, it's we want to repeal the three-strike law and get it on the ballot. It's working in place, an initiative in November 2022 ballot that would eliminate the three-strike law once and for all. So I know you guys know about the three-strike law. We're trying to get rid of it. You can contact them, www.repeal3strikes.org. You could donate. You could write them at P.O. Box 31022, Oakland, California, 94604. I bring this up because a lot of people are in for the three-strike law. And Kamala Harris, when I was dealing with her last year for Terminal Island and Dianne Feinstein, for Kamala Harris, I told her, you need to make that right. The drugs and everything, three-strike law, the marijuana stuff, California. So if anybody, you know, we're trying to get rid of that three-strike law. And if we come in numbers and we attack in numbers, we're going to get a success. So like I said, they need at least 6,500 to get it on the ballot and 14,000 to secure it in the ballot.
Yeah. And the problem with the three strikes law is that they go back. There's, as everybody knows, I did 20 years in California State Prison. I'm very aware of the three strikes law. And in fact, I have two strikes. So they, what they do is they even went back. They weren't supposed to go back. I knew a guy that had a felony back in the 70s. And he did something, I think, in 1990 or 2000, and he ended up getting a strike from that. And it didn't even happen in California. It happened in another state. And he got struck out because of that felony back in the 70s. So how they wrote that law and how it was supposed to be enforced is nothing what it is. It's absolutely
there we go again.
Ludicrous.
You see, they have policies and procedures, and they have it in black and white, but they pick and choose. You know, they pick and choose which one, you know, who's going to get this and who's going to get that. But we're trying to eliminate it altogether.
Yeah, it needs
we
to be.
We want to get rid of it altogether.
It's unconstitutional.
All of it is. Even we're trying to get rid of solitary confinement. How
yeah.
do you mean it's solitary confinement? People have issues. You don't lock them up for years in solitary confinement. We had a man
oh,
that we helped.
So when that thing passed, did you know how CDCR in at least state dealt with that? They sat there and started giving us our televisions inside the ADSEG. And that was back in 2000-something. That's how they – because they didn't want to get rid of the confinement. So instead of addressing that, they just sat there and said, okay, we'll give you a babysitter. Here, you could have your TV after 90 days.
And then you see, let me say, this is, okay, let me show you this. Okay, so you guys got TVs. But have the people kept fighting and not shut up and be pacified by those TVs, we would have better results. We would have better results.
And that was one of our issues in there.
And that's what people need to understand. These people will pacify you. Like these people for the state, they had no visits because of this COVID. Everybody wanted visits. Everybody wanted visits. So they pacified them and said, okay, we'll give you video. Guess what? Everybody shut up. Everybody shut up. Wait a minute.
Yeah, now they're all having issues.
Why
logging
are we quiet?
You
guys are quiet. You guys are quiet because you get to see your loved one on video for an hour. Let's keep fighting. Why are
we
still fighting?
Jennifer, what they're having issues now with is that they're only getting out of an hour visit, they're probably getting maybe 15 to 20 minutes, and that's each facility is different in the state.
But that's if they get it.
Level.
That's if they get it, because guess what? The computers don't work. The video stuff don't work. GTL has the biggest technical problems ever in life. So people will have visits, but because of technical difficulty, you don't get it.
Yeah, and how they pacified that is they gave every inmate 75 minutes per year.
Well, in the feds, they got free phone calls right now. They do get contact. They get visits for an hour every 2 weeks, but there's no contact. And it's arranged like a mental hospital. I feel like I'm in a mental hospital. I hate seeing people incarcerated. It kills me because I know when they go behind that door and go back into that evil facility that everything is not okay. And these people, I swear to God, you too, Sparky, you're the strongest to get out and do what you do, and have been incarcerated at such a young age where you had the potential to be institutionalized, yet you fed your brain, and you showed society that not all people are bad and we change. And I tip my hat to you, Sparky, for that. That's amazing. Not everybody can do that. And you started at a young age. You went in at, 17? And, oh, my God, that's total. All those years, all the things that you had to see, all the things that you had to witness as a baby, come on. I don't understand how these people in society say, lock up these babies for the life. Lock them up. Sparky, you're a blessing. You show these people, look, I was locked up. As a child, a young, immature punk kid thinking I knew everything. And I made it. I made it through the system. I have a wife. I have a roof over my head. I have my kids. I have my business. I have people that love me. I changed. I'm not institutionalized. I'm giving back the number. Sparky, you're the biggest. You don't understand how much of a role model you are. And I just, you know, I praise you for that. I thank you for the opportunity to letting me talk today. I think it's a blessing that you have this radio show and people can chime in. I'm in Sandy. I'm in California. Again, my Facebook is COVID-19 Terminal Island. Just say that you heard me on the show. And if you have somebody incarcerated, if you need help, I know federal is difficult. Families in Action. Families in Action is on Facebook, Twitter, and all that. They're amazing when it comes to federal law. The founder was incarcerated in federal prison. I think he did 13 years. And he changed, you know. And what is so amazing about all the past incarcerated people is that they're fired up. And they're coming out here and they're trying to make a change. And that's awesome because they lived it firsthand. So, like I said, I'm on Facebook. If you need anything, I might not have it in right then and there. Like I said, I do mostly federal. I do have attorneys that do state. If you have questions or need help, I will throw it out there. I am an advocate. However, I don't help people that don't help themselves. That's the only thing. If you're not willing to help yourself, honey, I don't have time. But if you're willing to help yourself, I'm willing to fight with you hand and foot. But the fight is for everybody. And it's not just your loved one, your loved one. I fight for everybody, for everything, for our youth, for our mental health, for our seniors, for our disabled, and our incarcerated loved ones. I don't know if Sparky, you had any, Sparky, did you have any questions? I don't know I don't know now. I think I'm probably done venting.
It's all right. That's what we do. What's your favorite part of advocacy?
My favorite part?
Yeah.
Would be
there's highs
my
and lows.
My favorite part is seeing the individual that we fought for get out and see their loved ones for the first time in however long they've been gone. And the smiles on those faces. And the tears of joy and those bear hugs. That's my reward. That's my reward. Seeing these kids not doing drugs and getting jobs, seeing the success from my work is my reward. I don't ask for nothing. It's all from the heart. And if I got it, I do give it. I donate where I can. I don't have much. I mean, I'm just here living my life as best as I can. But I am here, and I will fight. And I do have a voice, and I have found it. And I am not prejudiced. I'm not racist. I'm none of that. All I ask is that if you want me to fight for you or with you, you have to fight for yourself. And I don't think that's a big – that's a big – I don't think that's something big for somebody to not handle. If you want your freedom, you're going to fight.
Yeah, and it's okay to ask for help, too, because I know a lot of things. A lot of things with my transition is I had to have a lot of people do stuff for me as I learned. I also watched them do it, and I learned how to I go through the process with them. So if you do, like what you say is, you know, help yourself. And that's the thing is if somebody's out there and you don't know what you're doing, then you have to state that. You have to let the person know, like, hey, I have no idea how to do this. Will you please show me? And communication is key. And when we're able to communicate effectively, we get things done. And you know, and that's what we do at Legacy is we offer the mentorship to walk side by side with somebody, not just to tell them, you need to go do this, you need to go do that. And so what you're doing is amazing.
I believe that you can't let fear hold you back. You can't let pride get in your way. And never, never, never think that you're weak because you don't know. Everybody has a loved one that's incarcerated. If you don't know something,
Jennifer.
Huh?
One in six people in the world have an incarcerated loved one. One in 12 have somebody in the military. So if you do the math, we have more family within the incarcerated and the family members than the military. That's pretty huge when you think about it.
But the family members and the level, everybody needs to fight. You see,
yep.
It's not like, you know, like I said, they give you the pacifier. They give you the TV. They give you the visit. They give you the phone calls. And people shut up. That's their tactic.
And that's the problem is that when a loved one comes home, I advocate because it helps me sleep at night. I think I live so much of my life incarcerated that to live with myself, you know, I'm successful because of my people. I'm successful because of my family, my support network. But without – I don't ever forget where I came from. And I think that what I notice out here is that you'll see these advocates on fire, but once their loved one comes home, they're done. And then it's like, well, you fought for your loved one, not for everybody's. And so I agree with you on that, is if we all came together and, you know, I love your attitude about the, you know, if I can't do it, I'll find somebody that will. A lot of people want that recognition that it's them doing it rather than just going out and saying, hey, we need help. Like, for instance, a guy needed living assistance. So I went out to another organization and gave them the credit and said, hey, I need you to find a house for this person. Can you help me? And, yeah, they took the credit. But the thing is that as an advocate, I'm only here to direct traffic.
Yeah, as an advocate, it doesn't matter. You help somebody, you know.
But the advocates,
advocating is not about, ooh, I did that. Advocating is, yes, we were successful, let's move on. And we move in silence. An advocate, we're not there to get the fame and glory. We just want stuff to change because it bothers us and we don't like it.
Yeah.
I had a huge, I don't know if you've seen my first protest, I had a huge turnout. Well, all of those people's loved ones got out and I don't hear from none of them. And another thing for me as an advocate, that I didn't know and I wasn't ready for is the families calling me. I'm sitting up going, fight for this and fight for that and do this and call this number and email this and do that and this. And then I've got people saying, this is so hard. So I find myself mentoring. I find myself consoling the family members. And I'm like, wait, well, hold on. Who's there to console me? Nobody. Nobody, because they don't know my fight and my drive. They don't understand.
You know, somebody asked me that question. They said, you know, you have, because I have great advice for everybody except myself. And I have, you know, I'm there for everybody. And somebody says, well, Lawrence, who's there for you? And I sat there and said, well, I talk to God. You know, that is my consolement. That is where I go, you know, in hiding and I pray. And I sit there and I don't ask for a lighter load. You know, I ask for broader shoulders, and that's one of my sayings is that, you know, I could carry the world on my back. But there's times where, you know, I'm weak and I need help, and, you know, a lot goes to I complain to my wife, and she listens,
yeah,
and
I
complain to God.
Here we are advocates fighting for everybody else, but yet we don't know who to turn to when we need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we have all the answers for everybody else, and, oh, we can help this person and that person. But when we're feeling depressed or we're feeling that our faith is being tested, we don't know who to call. All we know how to do is pray to God. All you do is pray to God.
I can sit there and find, you know, resources for somebody else. I can't find anything for myself when I'm in need. So I just kind of – you know, self-care is very important, and prayer and faith and your support network. Because the thing about reentry that I like to focus on is the successful but permanency as well. You know, we don't just sit there and say, hey, for 6 months, we're going to, we're going to make sure you're out. Make sure you stay out. We're going to make sure you stay out forever. We're going to give you the tools necessary for the long haul, because attainment is the simple part. Maintaining is the difficult part. And so, like,
yeah.
and that's what we do. You know, a lot of guys I know have gotten out, and they don't want anything to do with prison. They don't want to help or nothing. I can't do that. You know, I was a mentor in there. I was I wanted to help people in there, and I help people out here. But the advocacy is it's a very unprofitable position. It is very. In fact, I had to go work 8 hours a day, get a job just to keep doing what I'm doing. And I see that this is more of a hobby now than a job. So, and it's a passion of ours. So we do what we do, but it's very important that we have the support network amongst each other. And I have that. I have you, Shayna, David. At any point, I think it's I could call anybody and ask for help and sit there and say, hey, I'm weak right now. Please help me. And so,
absolutely.
And I think that's the lovely part about advocacy is the ones that are in it and not half stepping. You know, I love y'all and everything that we do together and how we go forward. And for the ones that don't do what they're supposed to and they take a step back, you know, hopefully it's crazy how everybody sits here and acts like it's none of their business until one of their loved ones is involved. And then all of a sudden they're like, help me. I need help. And it's like, well, you weren't, this didn't affect you before. You know, so it's very important for everyone listening right now that, it's not near and dear. It's not a passion until somebody you love or somebody you know is involved. So
right.
Be compassionate towards each other and for strangers and have empathy for the people that are going through this struggle and this fight, you know, and when your loved one comes home, don't give up.
Stop judging. People need to stop judging. That's the problem, like judgment. Everything's so judgmental, you know. But
absolutely,
if us advocates, you know, we continue to come together, we continue to pull together, we continue to fight together. I really, really, truly believe that we are finally going to get results. And when I started my fight at Terminal Island, the spirit told me, "You're fighting a Goliath." And I'm like, no, I don't want to go. You know, it was the day for the protest. And I'm nervous, bubble guts, everything, you know, like, oh, my God. I've really got these people coming to Terminal Island for a protest. And all the spirit kept telling me is that you're going to be okay. You're fighting a Goliath, but you're going to be okay. You got me. And I mean, I tell you, this fight, you go up and you go down. And you get discouraged, and you start crying. There's plenty of times where you break down. But you just got to keep fighting this Goliath. Because if we don't, we're not going to get results. And faith without works is dead. We need to fight. We need to come together. We need to stop when you're looking for attorneys, please do your research. Don't get got. It's bad enough we're living in a society that's so expensive. The cost of living is nothing to the wages. And so getting money is really hard. So being taken advantage of is not okay. So do your research. I'm finding out that you really don't have to pay an attorney until you see their work. I found Yelp, which I should have used before I retained criminal defense attorneys. You know, do your research and reach out to us because there's a lot of fraudulent stuff going on out there, especially right now, and the attorneys too. So the attorneys are crooked too, and they're taking people's money. So please reach out to us. Reach out to us, and we'll get you, you know, the people that you need that can lead you in the right direction with legit attorneys that are not just trying to take your money.
Yeah, and there was a lady there's a woman that called me, and she asked me, she's all, you know, what should I do? And she named the name of the it was based out of L.A. I forgot the name of it, but it was funny. that, you know, I got to tell her what they did to me, and it was almost a mirror effect. They were asking her for the same amount. They were saying what they could do, and these people got us for about $3,600, and that was 10 years ago. And we got two letters from them, and that's it. So, you know, it's important that when we – a good thing about support network is that you got the people that made the mistakes, the people that made the bad judgment calls, the people that fell for whatever they fell for.
Okey-doke.
And
yeah.
Now we're the people that are helping other people not make the same mistake, and that's what's so important. So, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm here. So
everybody, you got support. You know, and I'm here. I've got people in New York. I'm nationwide. So if I don't have an answer, I will get the answer. I do have somebody in state. I have a couple of people in state here in California that if I had questions would definitely be able to help me as far as legal-wise. So just as far as attorneys go, do your research. I know everybody's desperate. You get desperate at these times, and these people know it. Don't act out of desperation. There are people out there that are doing pro bono work. I just found out when the COVID hit how many people are out there, and it just blew my mind how amazing it was to actually have people out there that helped you with certain things. So on a federal level, give me a call if you want to start your fight, you want to start getting a voice. I'll tell you the steps that we took. You could also look on my website. You can look on my Facebook group. You can see what we did. You can Google Terminal Island, and our news clips will come up. Our protests will come up for the Terminal Island. If you have a loved one in Terminal Island, we are fighting for them, and know that I'm here for you. I'm sure you've heard of me, Jennifer Van Atta. But anyway, Sparky, I don't know. I mean, everything's good over here. I hope you had a good turnout today. Happy Halloween to everybody.
Happy Halloween. That's right. Oh, I forgot about that, actually.
Yeah. It's Halloween today. People be safe, please. Check your baby's candy. And if you do all that, I never celebrated it. I kind of just did a Halloween party and called it a day. But I know there's a lot of people that dress up their cute little ghosts and goblins, take pictures, remember the moment, and happy Halloween.
Absolutely.
Be safe.
Yeah, and Jennifer, thank you for everything you do. And I know you don't hear it enough, but we really do appreciate all the work you put in, the effort and the passion that you put in to helping other people. And just for leaving people, places, things better than you found them.
Yeah, that's the goal. That right
so
there.
You are the hands and feet of Jesus, as one of the persons in my support network tell me. They're like, you know, just be the hands and feet of Jesus. So, thank you for everything you do. Really.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. And as I tell all my guests, you know, you are feel free to every Sunday at 12:30 Pacific time. You can call in and leave a comment, listen. You don't have to come in and speak. You don't have to say anything. You can just listen if you feel like it. We want to make sure that we bring awareness and educate everybody we can based off of our calls in life and our life lessons. And I think that's what's important here, you know, is helping each other out and being, you know, everybody is a role model, whether you're good or bad. So,
right.
You know,
everybody,
I encourage
somebody's
you,
watching you.
Yeah, no, really. And I encourage you to come on here and give us your 2 cents and to, you know, engage if you can, if you want to, you always have that welcome. Okay.
Absolutely. And if there's anybody out there who's fighting a federal case that's trying to get their loved one out on compassionate release, I do have case files that I can email to you guys that will help you with your motions.
Nice. You have contact information, right?
My contact information, I'm on Facebook in the group. You can contact me through that, DM me. Yep. Through the group.
Okay. So, yeah, tell everybody if they could, where they can reach you, and if you want to give some words of advice or encouragement, feel free.
Okay. Words of advice, never give up. Words of encouragement, the struggles don't last always. You're going to hit struggles, and you're going to get those struggles. But look at your past and how you made it through to get through this struggle. Build your faith. Don't never let the devil get in your head. And you guys have a good day. Like I said, my name is Jennifer Van Atta on Facebook. I also I'm on Twitter as Terminal TI Advocate. I'm on Instagram, Jennifer Van Atta, and I have the group on Facebook, which is COVID-19 Terminal Island. There are questions to get into the group because we did make it private. We do have a lot of media and Congress media in there. We ask that we stick to the script and no disrespecting other members of the group. If the question is, how did you hear about us? You would tell them that Jennifer told us about it. And it's going to ask if you have a loved one incarcerated at Terminal Island. Now, that it doesn't matter. If they're in Terminal Island or just incarcerated, period, we're there for you. You're always welcome to DM me. I know the struggle. I know the pain, so I know how it's easy to just want to scream and vent. I'm there for you. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with just listening to you vent. I'm there. So just don't hit me at 3 or 4 in the morning because I think I'll be asleep.
Well, as my wife says,
other than that, I'm here. Yeah. Sparky, you guys have a good day. Have a wonderful Halloween. Stay safe and God bless.
God bless you too. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. Okay.
All right. So I just want to sit there and thank Ms. Jennifer Van Atta for always being super helpful, extremely knowledgeable in what we do. And so if you guys want any more contact, with help or any resources that we can outsource to, you can hit us up on legacyprograms.net. You can also find our group Legacy Programs on Facebook, as well as our Legacy Each One Teach One. And please hit up Terminal Island, COVID-Terminal Island on Facebook as well. And We Are Their Voices is a good source of information. Also, I mean, there's so many. If you just type in reentry, you're going to come up with all kinds of different groups. So, you know, I encourage everybody to, you know, get knowledgeable in this and don't give up. Just keep doing what you're doing and live your best life. And so, I mean, that's I'm doing that right now. I'm working construction now. I'm sitting there. I own my own car. I do what I can to pay the bills and to be proactive out here. I am learning that advocacy is not the easiest. It's very difficult. You're dealing with different people. It's very draining at times. But like I say, you know, when you just find that self-care and that prayer and your higher power, go to your support network, your wife, your husband, your peoples, and, you know, get that strength to carry on. And, you know, I always say how it begins is never how it ends. If you were to tell me that 20 years ago I would have my own organization, that I would be a pastor, that I would have a full-time job working construction, building multi-million dollar homes, or even my old baking job, I would have called you a liar. So, I mean, that's just, it's real weird how life turns out. And the crazy thing is that, you know, when you put your mind to it and you say, this is what I'm going to accomplish, this is what I want to do, it's everything that I've set out to do except for a few things, I've been able to accomplish within a year. I've only been out, 24th of November will be my anniversary of being out. And just all the stuff I've accomplished in 1 year, it took a lot of work and a lot of struggle. And, you know, during those struggles, it was very difficult to see any fruit from that. I never thought I'd get through it, but I did. You know, and it's not, I'm not special. I'm not unique. I am just like everybody else. So if I can do it, so can you. So don't lose hope. Don't get so caught up in the emotion of feeling helpless and broken that it allows you to not accomplish what you set out to do. Yeah, it's going to take some time. It's going to be difficult. But if it was easy, everybody would do it. And you can't have the testimony without the test. That's just how it works out here, is that you gotta be pushed through it, and in the end, you're gonna realize your weaknesses and your strength, and it's gonna make you a better person. So, and to all my brothers and sisters out there behind the walls, I love you. We have not forgotten about you, and we fight for you day in and day out, and that will never change. And so, for all the advocates out there doing what you're doing, thank you so much. Our people appreciate it. Your people, our loved ones, beyond words and expression, just thank you. And for the advocates that aren't, and you call yourself an advocate, hey, tomorrow's another day. I pray for you. I hope that you can get it together. Because we all need each other in this. This fight is not, we're up against a Goliath, as Jennifer says. And so hopefully we can all work together and figure something out. Leave your egos, leave your pride at the door, and put on that hat to serve others. That's pretty much the mentality. So, like I said, if you all want to know anything about us, we offer mentors, we offer special projects. We had a guest on that we're doing a special page for her. We're putting pictures of her son up, so people could get to know the person, not the inmate. He unfortunately died while in custody. And it's a mystery of what exactly happened. So we want to celebrate his life and be very grateful for his presence. And so there's pictures. You could check it out on legacyprograms.net under, I believe, projects or gallery. So, and that will be up about in an hour. So thank you for everybody that tuned in today. You know, just have a wonderful day. Happy Halloween. Be safe. Be vibrant and just be yourself. And I just want to say thank you for everything that everybody does, and just keep doing what you're doing. Stay blessed. All right. So thank you for the guests. I see Christine was on, Jennifer, and 805 number. So thank you so much. And a huge shout out to Terminal Island, COVID-19 Terminal Island. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for all the insight. Thank you so much for the information. And hopefully we could all do a little better to help those that can't help themselves. So thank you so much. And with that, we are going to end today's show. So thank you, Leona. If you all want to donations for New Vision Organization based out in Massachusetts, sorry. Check it out. We are still looking for a pro bono lawyer to look into the misconduct of our loved ones behind the wall. And it's not an easy thing to do. So if anybody's interested, if anybody knows somebody, we welcome any insight you can give or any information that you can offer. Thank you so much. And y'all have a wonderful day. Stay blessed. And be spooky. Bye, y'all.